So this is the title of my talk, and then I'm going to talk about the nimbus spin Hall effect as a means to study nonlinear spin fluctuation. But then before going further, then I'd like to express my sincere thanks to organizers, particularly Professor Gerrit Bauer and also Professor Cerkoviniak. And I'm very privileged to be here. So the idea of our study is that we are just interested in how we can just extend our inverse spin Hall effect study to the other thing. So then I'd like to show you, this is a collaboration with the Professor Maekawa's group and my group. And particularly main contributors of the study is my young fellows in my group, Assistant Professor Dr. Niimi, and also the at that time the postdoc, Da Hai Wei from Fudan University. And now he's in Regensburg in Germany. And all these three people, and then Dr. Bogu and also Professor Zeiman from ILL, and also Professor Maekawa from JAEA. And then I myself wanted to represent ISSP, University of Tokyo, and also Riken SEMS. So this is just, I'd like to just figure out and show you the my motivation of this study. So far, this interesting conference, and it dealt like a previous speaker, and everyone is talking about detection. I mean, just the day before yesterday, Dr. Uchida talked about the Spin-Zebec effect. And spin Hall effect is a key effect to detect all these behaviors. And also secondly, and like a previous speaker, what you do is a switching of magnetization or oscillate magnetization by using spin current. So that's why the essential feature of the spin Hall effect is just this spin current and just conversion, mutual conversion between the spin currents and the charge currents. So this is very essential and important. Then the question is, what kind of other use of spin Hall effect can be found in our study? That's my question. So then if you look at the literature, so far the other application of spin Hall effect has not been demonstrated yet. So today I'd like to just show you the example of detection of nonlinear spin fluctuation via inverse spin Hall effect. So that this is a my message to you today. Then this is the outline of my talk. As an introduction, I'd like to talk about a little bit in the spin Hall effect and also anomalous Hall effect. And then there is a number of studies performed in 50s and 60s, and the anomalous Hall effect study of pure nickel and also iron. And I'd like to just introduce this Kondo's model. This Kondo is the same person as Kondo effect, Jun Kondo, but he also worked very intensively. This anomalous Hall effect, he developed very interesting theory. So we just try to benefit from this theory. And I'd like to show you some experimental procedure. Particularly, we use a static method, Fourier transport method to determine spin Hall angle. But so far, people have been using this dynamic measurement and evaluating just a ratio between the current, JS and JC, and then claiming the huge number of spin Hall angle. Our method is different. I'd like to just show you a little bit in detail. And then we show you some experimental result. Our experiments show the very anomalous behavior in the vicinity of transition temperature, that's Curie temperature of this weakly ferromagnet. In our case, nickel-palladium alloys, and try to compare our experimental result with extended Kondo's model, and we just readapt Kondo's model to the inverse spin Hall effect behavior, and then summarize my talk. So introduction. So this is, maybe I don't need to repeat, this is a schematic diagram that if it shows the direct spin Hall effect and the inverse spin Hall effect. If you look at this direct spin Hall effect, the charge current is flowing upspin and downspin, oppositely deflected. As a result, in the here charge accumulation somehow, spin accumulation takes place this side and also this side. But even if you hook this voltmeter, you can measure nothing. But in the case of inverse spin Hall effect, you just pass the pure spin current along this edge, and then Similarly, both up and down spins deflected the same direction. As a result, charge accumulation takes place this side and this side, and then you can measure the voltage drops across this edge. So this is a way which you can just measure spin hole effect electronically. So this type of measurement that we're going to employ. So this is, has been, I think, demonstrated at the very beginning, prior work, pioneering work was performed by Kato in Osram group in 2004. And this is, that's why, very interesting way, means to generate or convert pure spin current and charge current. So in the contrary, in the case of anomalous Hall effect, you have magnetic moment inside. Typically, you apply magnetic field perpendicular to the film plane. Since then, you have two spin channels up and down and equally populated. Therefore, you see the spin charge accumulation takes place this side in this case. Therefore, you can measure the voltage. So this is the essential difference between the spin Hall effect and anomalous Hall effect. So then in 50s and 60s, as I mentioned in the outline, there are a number of studies about the anomalous Hall effect. So this is the typical example demonstrated by this Jan and Levine. And this solid line is actually the theory fitting. This type of behavior, it's an interesting thing is, there is a kind of peak structure right below the TC and takes a peak and it's going down and to the very, very small value. So this is a feature of temperature dependence of anomalous Hall effect. So then iron as well, which shows exactly the same type of behavior. So to explain this peak, there is the famous Kapler-Schrödinger theory, which shows this transverse spin hole resistivity, hole resistivity is proportional to the longitudinal resistivity squared times average magnetization. Scale with average magnetization, this is the Schrödinger model, which shows. And also this second famous Kondo theory, which gives this type of relation, which is coming from taking into account the interaction between conduction electron and the localized moment. In a sense, SD interaction and also spin orbit interaction. And this gives, so actually the scattering amplitude is given by this third order spin fluctuation term and also this fourth order. This gives this up spin channel R sub 1 plus R2, summation of the two. Here, the down spin minus R1 plus R2. So therefore, as a resultant, you have to subtract this guy from this guy, this part. This minus this gives only this R1 contribution. So that means the third order spin fluctuation, which gives this Hall effect. Apparently, this model quite well explains the results like this solid line. And third order spin fluctuation explains well the behavior of temperature dependence, but almost Hall effect. So then when you have pure spin current into this spin orbit material, like anomalous Hall, the permanent, what will happen? That is a question. Particularly, we are interested in the vicinity of TC, where we can expect spin fluctuation. So that's the question. In this case, both spin channels up to the spin and both deflected to the same direction because we inject the pure spin current into it. In this case, what will happen, particularly in the case of inverse spin hole signal versus temperature? That is what our question raises at this moment. So now, then I'd like to get into the experimental part. So then what we employ, non-local spin injection. Typically, we have non-magnetic metals such as copper or silver, but in this experiment we used copper. There is an ohmic contact spin injector permalloy wire which is attached to this copper, and we just flow the spin polarized current from ferromagnet into non-magnetic metal. Therefore, what we expect is spin injection into the copper. We can expect this type of spin accumulation in the vicinity of the junction. Therefore, the accumulated spin diffusively propagates from left to right. So that's what is happening. This is pure spin current. This behavior can be easily expressed by using this simple diffusion equation. This is a one-dimensional diffusion equation, which will give you this kind of exponential decay of spin accumulation, actually spin density. And what is happening is, if you look at this up spin, follows the gradient of this chemical potential. Therefore, up spin moves like this, and a down spin moves like this. In fact, in this, over this range, and you can expect spin angular momentum is transferred from left to right. Therefore, for example, this angular momentum, spin angular momentum, can be utilized to exert a spin torque. That's what I think we have been looking at the, I have been listening a lot of interesting talks based on this concept. So now, then what we do is then we put detector pheromone here, and this configuration, either parallel or anti-parallel, will give you a different signal here. So therefore, in the case of parallel, since the sigma for up spin channel and the down spin channel is different, therefore, stationary state gives you this a positive signal, and anti-parallel gives you a negative signal. Therefore, when you scan the magnetic field in this way, the what will happen is you will get the typical hysteresis type behavior, and this up high value corresponds to this, and the low value corresponds to this bound. So this is a typical spin valve experiment. Now we are sure that in this configuration, we can accumulate or restore the spins in between the two ferromagnets. So what you do is you put the material of interest, in our case, nickel palladium, here. Then we do the spin injection here. Important thing is, now we apply magnetic field along the wire so that the spin axis is pointing this direction. And also, nickel palladium, we can expect reasonably high spin orbit interaction. Therefore, this acts as a spin absorber. Here, the approaching spins, pure spin current, which absorbed into perpendicularly to the nickel palladium. Since the spin axis is this direction, therefore, spin Hall effect, inverse spin Hall effect, and deflect both electrons as spins to the same direction. And then we can expect charge accumulation. Therefore, then we can measure the spin Hall effect. This is the idea of our experiments. So, and then we can do the same, the spin valve experiment as well. Unfortunately, this is not rotated in this picture, but in reality it's different because then we apply magnetic field, align magnetization along this direction. So that with combining these two methods, we can evaluate exact amount of spin current which is absorbed into this nickel palladium, so that we can really determine the ratio between the spin current and also charge current with using this technique. So this is a typical result of a spin Hall effect of this material. So this is the kind of typical structure. Now this purple, this one represents palm alloy wire. This is also the counter palm alloy wire. Then we have nickel palladium wire around here. Typical size of the wire is about, width is 100 nanometers, and thickness is 20 nanometers. And this value is much larger than, in fact, the spin diffusion lengths of nickel palladium. Therefore, spins really perpendicularly absorbed completely. So now, then, as I said, when we apply magnetic field in this direction, so the spin orientation is like this, and if it's perpendicularly absorbed into the nickel palladium. So gradually, if you apply magnetic field, and the magnetization rotates, and then towards this line, which can be seen in this AMR experiment. So you can see this saturation field is around here, which corresponds to this edge and this edge. So we measured in three different samples and with three different concentrations of nickel in palladium. So this black line is the representation only single, only pure palladium wire. In the case of pure palladium, and we can expect intrinsic spin hole effect. And now then we put the nickel in it, therefore then we expect skew scattering behavior. So then we'll see what will happen. And also then, as I said, and with or without spin absorption, this spin valve signal is significantly different. And this one is small signal, this is big. So that means the difference is definitely absorbed into this nickel palladium. So that's when we can. And we analyze with this type of equation, and it will give you exactly the spin diffusion lengths of this material, nickel palladium. In our case, the data. This ratio, then what I said, this, and 0.32. And from this value, and putting it in this equation, and we get this lambda here. So that is the 10 nanometers in our case. So, and then we are interested in the spin hole resistivity as anomalies in this inverse spin hole signal. New TC was clearly observed.